Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome back to Bretton Cliff's Flea Circus. What are you doing? What? Hello? You interrupted. Do you want to do the hello?
That's a good start, isn't it?
I'm not bothered.
Hello?
Hello?
And welcome to Bretton Cliff's Flea Circus.
Oh.
Circus.
What a magnificent hello. How are you? My name is Cliff.
I'm fine. Are you sure?
Yes, what's your name?
Sure, it's Cliff. Did we decide you were?
This is the worst start to a podcast ever.
Yeah, I'll be him.
Hello, my name's Cliff. Hi, this is a podcast, and this is our 56th episode. Not that you would gather it from the shambles of an introduction. You look reminiscent.
Hello, yes. I do.
Yeah.
Of who?
Of myself. Of a lupine defender, a lupine Dutch defender.
Yeah. This week I'm John DeWolf because we didn't even mention him last week, did we? We're more gutted about that. So John DeWolf. John the Wolf.
Hello, yes, John the Wolf.
I've been dreaming about John DeWolf.
Well, to be honest, I haven't slept.
Are you?
Because of not mentioning him last week. Been tossing and turning all night.
Well, there you go. It's one of them things, isn't it? I used to be a werewolf, Cliff, you know.
Did you?
Do you know how that joke ends? Yeah.
Why don't you tell us?
Do you not know how it ends?
I know how it ends, but that's not how jokes go. Like,
go on,
the person
do it,
telling
then.
The joke says the end.
Yeah, but I want you to do it.
Okay, but I'm all right now. That's how that ends.
That's it, yeah. That is how it ends. Well done.
Yeah,
that's not how.
Well, hang on. Did you know that I used to run a dating service for chickens?
No.
Yeah, I was struggling to make ends meet.
Nice. Lovely.
I wish we should just
that is
say
a good one.
Yeah,
anyway, I'm not a werewolf anymore.
No,
it is good. I'm not a werewolf anymore. I was cured by the wonders of modern science.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, there are some benefits to it. Big pharma. So anyway, if you're wondering why we've started in such a fashion, and we've told a couple
chaotic
of jokes, that's because my dad said last week's episode wasn't as funny as the one before. So I'm just going to tell dad jokes all the way through. I will, as a disclaimer, is that the right word that I'm looking for?
I suppose so.
Disclaimer, I'm not claiming to have written any of these jokes, and nor do I, nor am I aware of the original origin. Don't need the word original before that, do you? I'm not aware of their origin. I am reading them from 150 best dad jokes that are actually funny on menshealth.com. Seems an unlikely place for it.
Well, everybody needs a good cheer.
Well, I mean, it's
unlike you, I've got jokes, but I know where they're from. Okay. I've selected the Viz for my jokes. So let's hope Brian likes the Viz. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I know I do, so I'm very happy about that. What have you been up to this week?
That's good. I have been up to absolutely nout.
Is that
absolutely
just how
nothing.
It goes now?
Just how it goes, yeah. But the, I should be back to work soon, hopefully, in a couple of weeks. So I'll not be bored, put it that way. I'll stop watching Star Trek and do normal things. What have you been up to?
Well, the last time I spoke to you in the week, I was about to go and play football. And
yes.
I scored. I got off the mark. So that's good.
Mm.
We had an emphatic win. And I was given the nickname, well, before the game, everybody on the team was given a footballer that they're most like. And I want you to guess who mine was. And I also would like to hear who you think you are or would be. But you can start with me. Who do you think?
I'll go with me first. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with me.
Okay.
I think that I am mostly like probably an Italian footballer, one of the good-looking ones, probably Dino Baggio.
Dino Baggio? You think you're a similar player to Dino Baggio?
No, not that's just who I look like. Okay. I play a little bit. I'm a mixture of Hadji and, let's just go with Hadji. Full on Hadji.
And a mixture of Hadji and someone much worse than Hadji. You're in the middle somewhere.
I'm a mixture of Georgie Hadji and Gareth Hall.
Bloody hell.
That's who
was,
I
at one point, he was Sunderland's worst ever signing, but he has been usurped many a time since then, hasn't he?
It certainly has.
So
it's not like who you look like. It's who you play like.
No, it was based on like who we play like, but also, I think, characteristics. So actually...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So go on then, have a guess. I'll give you some clues if you want.
Who are you?
Five guesses.
Yeah, go on. Give us some clues. It's a while since I played football with you. In fact, I would say it's an awful long time.
Yeah,
possibly 20 years.
20 years, yeah. I'll tell you now, I haven't improved in those 20 years.
Well, none of them.
I am a former England international from our era.
Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Yeah, that's your first one. So you can have guess one, and I'll give you another one after that.
England international. I think, was Julian Dix ever an England international? Must
be. Do you think I'm playing left back? Do you really think I'm playing left back?
I don't know where you play. Is it not Julian Dix?
Nowhere that needs any discipline, as the story will continue to prove.
Are you Jeff Thomas?
I'm not Jeff Thomas, although my movement is about the same as his is now.
You're not Carlton Palmer from last week, are you?
No.
Oh,
okay,
good.
Right, next one. He used to kick the ball. He was known for kicking the ball in a specific way.
He used to kick the ball. I like that. That was a good one. Ball. Yeah. He used to kick the ball, this footballer. That's good. In a specific way. I can't think of anybody who kicks it in a specific way apart from free kicks. David Beckham and Ronaldo.
Okay.
Of the likes. Are you David Beckham?
No, I'm not David Beckham. Far from it. I think I had no front teeth for a period of time.
No front teeth. That's a difficult one. The only people, I mean, Ian Dowie never played for England. He played for Northern Ireland. No. I was originally going to say Ian Dowie.
Because you're an insulting bastard. That's your guess, Ian Dowie, even though you know already it's not him?
Yes, that is the guess.
Who
is it?
A functioning alcoholic.
Tony Adams.
No, man.
That's all I know.
I played for teams including Arsenal in Middlesbrough.
Mercer.
Yeah. I've been nicknamed Merce.
Have you? Do you also have a quite severe cocaine habit?
No cocaine, but the alcohol and...
The gambling? He had the full package.
Did he have all of them, did he? Oh, I thought it was just a booze, to be honest.
He had a lot.
But this is a much worse nickname than I thought it was at first. Anyway, that happened. So I came on, crossed the ball in with the outside of my boot for a little header, set up one, and then dropped the shoulder on a defender, went back outside, keeper at the near post with my right foot. That was good.
Very nice.
We won 6-0.
Who are you playing? Gerard Blind School?
Yeah, classic. Absolute classic.
Classic.
No, I'm pretty sure they all had full vision.
I can't be sure. I have remembered something I did last week, actually, but okay. I've kind of blocked it out because it was terrible. I've tried to watch 5 new films and switch them all off after 20 minutes.
Okay, what did you watch? All
disgraceful. One of the ones that I remember watching was the film Monster Hunter, which was an absolute disgrace. So I switched that off.
I think I know the name of it. Who's that by?
It's that lad, I think he's from Sunderland, Paul Anderson. He did like all the...
It's not Paul Thomas Anderson, is it? Who makes the good films? No. Paul W.S. Anderson?
That's right.
His films are terrible. Imagine thinking that you're going to watch like a There Will Be Blood and you get one stone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's done well for him, so. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Was it Mila Jankovic? Was that her name? Anyway.
Yeah, she's
married to her now.
Oh, yeah, because of Resident Evil.
Aye. He's got one good film, though. The science fiction one about the spaceship. That one's good.
Okay.
Like that one.
What's it called, the spaceship?
It's called Science Fiction Spaceship Time.
Can you remember any other ones?
That I watched. I didn't really look at the title. I just looked at the description of what they were about. And they were all absolutely terrible. I just switched them off.
Well, maybe it's better to judge a film by its cover. And you should.
Maybe it is. Maybe I should do that.
I watched a film called Light from Light, which came out a couple of years ago. And it's, again, if you had read the description, you wouldn't be happy with what the film was about. Because it's described as like a paranormal investigator goes to investigate some paranormal activity in a widower's widow. If you're a man, are you a widower? I think in a widower's house, who he's thinks that the lights are flashing and keys are moving. He's getting messages from his dead wife and stuff.
All right, was it any good?
It was, but it is not a ghost story film or a haunted house film. It's like the most low key film I've seen. In a long time. It's more like just a study of getting over grief and like talking through problems and stuff like that and being lonely.
Is that what you want to watch, though?
Because that was
very similar to the stuff I was watching.
I wanted to watch a ghost film. That's just depressing. What I thought it was going to be. I'd geared myself up for a scary film and didn't get one. It was good, but I can imagine most people watching it would just be like, well, what the fuck, ghosts? Like, this is really boring. It was just very slow. It was all about the dialogue. But it was a very nice film, like quite deep. I had really put a lot of effort into being ready to watch a ghost film. So that was disappointing.
Well, you were good. Event Horizon is the name of that.
I know that one.
It's good, that one.
Hey, I took Pearl to watch an orchestra last week. I forgot to mention that.
Did you?
But I had to take her out because there was too much sax and violins. Anyway.
It's a good one.
It is a good one. That is it. And we're talking about Pearl. I've reached I've reached a new dad level, I think. I've taken it up a notch. Now, I went in the car the other day on my way to play football and turned the engine on, and a child's music CD came on. It was like Farmer in the Den or something like that. I'm like, right, this is it. New level unlocked.
I liked all that stuff, though, when I was... Because we don't have music on in the car anymore because there's no CD player. Do you know, I used to like me CDs and stuff like that. Player. Have you? Mm. We haven't got a CD player. I used to love that.
What do you have then?
I used to let Lennon listen to whatever he wanted. It was mainly Boris the Spider.
Yes.
And that song a couple of weeks ago that I was trying to explain was from Lazy Town. Remember Lazy Town?
Yes. Yeah.
That was it. He used to like that. So I used to like stuff like that. I used to enjoy it.
I don't mind it at all. The songs, these ones are actually quite good. So I'm all right with that.
I'm fine. Yeah.
This happened in the week. I was leaving work and went in the car park. There's a multi-story car park where I park, and it absolutely stunk, like really, really, really bad. And as I was walking along, I saw like a big shit on the floor, like in the middle of the like road bit where you would pull out and drive along. A big shit, like not a cat shit, and there's no stray dogs here, like you just don't get them. So it could only be a human shit. It could only be.
Like, that's terrible.
But it also was right in the middle of the road. Like, it wasn't like by the wall or in the corner or anything. So I can't even begin to picture how it ended up happening. Like,
does Johnny Vegas not live in Sabine
now? Honestly, it was the worst smell. It was so bad.
Why is there no dogs? Why did they shoot them?
I don't know. There's no, like, you get stray cats, but you don't get, just don't get dogs. Just not
because they don't mix well.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? They don't mix. I think that should be what it is. I think it probably is anyway. So do you want to hear me visit your clip?
Go on then.
It's a good one. A lad who follows were called Billy, even though I don't think he's called Billy. He's called Gareth.
Yeah.
So tell me your real name, Billy. He posted this on. So this is it. If I took on a shark in a triathlon, I'm pretty sure I could outrun it. But it would obviously be a much faster swimmer than me. So basically, it would come down to who was the better cyclist.
That's a good joke.
It is a good one. I've got another one for you.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. People think Stephen Hawking is so clever, but when you ask him a question, he's typing the answer on his little screen. How do we know he isn't just looking up the answer on the internet? And I like this one, but you might have to cut it out. I don't like Prince Philip because he says some very racist things, but I also don't like him because he's Greek. So I don't quite know where that leaves me.
Well, he could well be dead, or like officially dead by the time this comes out.
I know.
Never mind.
Well, that's what I meant.
Never mind just pretending to be alive, like when he's propped up in the seat of that car.
Yeah, that's what I meant. He could be dead, and also there's racist connotations for that joke, so could be cut out for two reasons, couldn't it? It certainly could.
The
other idea I've had for you, Cliff, is you don't know about this, but what I decided to do is reach out to the people on Twitter, right, and let them know that you're a new agony uncle.
Okay.
Agony aunt. Would you prefer to be an agony aunt?
I'm non-gender specific. I'm all right.
Well, that's good.
I'll be a non-binary agony responder.
Nice one. So what I've asked the people on the good old Twitter to send where your problems. So I'll read out the first one and see what your response is.
Okay.
So I'm not naming the person because they're quite personal, these things, aren't they?
Okay.
My girlfriend insists on having her dog in the bedroom, and it sniffs around us when we have sex. It's a big problem for me. I'm 32 and she's 30. We've been dating a year. I can cope with her dog being in the bedroom at night, but not when we're having sex. Her dog sits watching me or keeps sniffing around us. My girlfriend isn't fazed by it. I love her dearly, but her dog is becoming a big problem.
Okay.
What would you say to that, Cliff?
I mean, it's got to, it must be really off-putting if you, if you contemplate not having sex. It must be like a really bad problem. When he's saying sniffing around, like, yeah, like he's, do you think he means like he's bum hole and he's got his pants down?
Like, I've got no idea.
That's a bit much, isn't it?
It is a little bit too much.
I think
isn't
it's like actual sniffing and then the wet nose is like brushing against you. Then that's not good.
Nobody likes to touch a dog's nose, do they?
It's just weird, isn't it? Like,
really, it is just weird.
Really strange sensation. And especially,
I think his girlfriend is a right pervert and wants to involve the dog in the
do you?
Shenanigans.
That never crossed my mind.
Did it not?
But,
there you go.
Well, I mean, I have a cat who indulges in the same kind of behavior. So I would encourage whoever this chap is to just try and block it out. Anyway, why has he not got his eyes tight shut like everybody else?
Just hoping for the best. It's probably because the dog's there. Doesn't want any unfortunate accident.
Waiting for the dog.
The thing is, I've got a dog and I would never engage in sex while the dog was there because it just look at you, wouldn't it? I don't like them looking at
you. You've got a small yapper type dog as well, so it would be getting very excited, I would imagine. Very excitable.
It would.
Yeah, so whoever that is, I think, like, either just close your eyes like the rest of us and get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, like, if there's something wet, like, brushing around your bottom, like, it could be anything, couldn't it? If you've got your eyes closed, just get on with it and enjoy it. That's my advice.
It could be. Well, Adam Yates, I hope that's helped you out.
As if he thought about
joke,
that.
No, he wouldn't, would he? First name would pop up my head. Sorry. So, any more dad jokes from you? Or have you done the lot?
No, I've told you I've got 150, so I've got about 145 left.
Have you read through all these 150 jokes?
No,
I'm
just going to do them. Did you know that?
You're just going to drop them in?
Did you know that somebody in London gets stabbed every 52 seconds?
No.
Poor bastard.
Yeah, that one wasn't as good. Wasn't as good, that one.
Was it not? It was because it was like, it was trying to be too clever, wasn't it?
It was trying to be too clever.
Would you prefer like a my wife kind of joke?
Yeah, I'd like an Irishman, an Englishman, and a Scotsman joke, please.
No, we can't do that.
You're not allowed to do that. I know you're not allowed to do that. I know you're not. Cliff, I've got a question for you, though.
Okay.
Is there like a useless skill to you? It would be useless to you. It's not useless to everybody that you'd like to learn. Because I've got one.
Okay, go on. You tell us yours and I'll think about it.
I'd like to learn Morse code. I think I'd like to do it. It'd be useless to us. Yeah, it'd be completely useless to us. But I'm reading books and, you know, people are trapped in cars and they're doing Morse code and stuff like that with the horn. And it, just in case, you know, I might get trapped in a Russian nuclear submarine or something. It would be useful, wouldn't it?
It would be,
in that situation.
It would be.
Do you have anything like that that you'd like to learn that you know would be useless?
I think I'd quite like to learn, you know, like when people do that bonsai tree stuff where you just prune small trees.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd quite like to learn that. It seems like quite a nice therapeutic little
pastime. That's because you think you're the Karate Kid, though, isn't it?
Is that in the Karate Kid? I can't remember.
Must be. Sure, Mr. Miyagi. Sure, Mr. Miyagi has the bonsai trees, doesn't he?
I didn't tell you that. My brother, you know, Daniel, he claims he's glued himself to his own autobiography. I mean, I don't believe him, but it's his story and he's sticking to it.
That was the worst one.
No, they're going to get worse. Obviously.
I don't think your dad's going to They're going to get worse.
Uh-huh.
I don't think your dad's going to appreciate these jokes, to be perfectly honest. I think he prefers the off the cuff.
Before we get onto the film, I went to the doctors this week and he told us I was going deaf. That was hard for us to hear.
That's awful. Absolutely awful.
Well, Cliff,
how'd you get Pikachu on the bus?
Do you Pokemon?
You Pokemon?
Amazing. It works for any Pokemon, doesn't it?
It does. It does work for all.
How do you
Pokemon?
Get Bulbasaurus on a bus?
That's the only Pokemon I know, though. Pikachu.
Well, I've told just to Bulbasaurus.
Right, I've instantly forgot it though.
Okay, well, whatever. Should we talk about Westworld, or do you want us to say more terrible jokes?
I think we should talk about Westworld, and then you can just put a joke in there, and I'll probably think you're serious. That's what I should think, because that's what we're talking about today, isn't it? Good old Westworld.
Yes, the film, the original film from 1973.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your choice. Do you want to tell the listeners why you chose it?
I'll try. I like this one. I remember watching it as a kid, a very young kid, maybe 7 or 8, something like that. It's one of those ones that was on like late BBC Two, and I caught it then and I loved it. It was fantastic. It's a good one, and I like it because there's robots.
Yeah, there's robots.
Killer
That's
robots. Have you seen it before? Is it the first?
You know
time
what? It's one of the again one of those like you late at night BBC Two. But I used to fall asleep all the time when I watched films late at night on BBC Two or whatever. So I've definitely started it loads of times and never finished it. Mm-hmm. So I remember the beginning. And obviously I know the overall story just because it's such a common touchstone in culture and sci-fi. Films and sci-fi and stuff like that, isn't it? So I'm aware of what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And then see, we've talked about recently, I started watching the series, which is kind of a remake. The basic premise is the same.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's there's probably
the
a lot
TV
of...
program.
Go on, sorry.
Sorry, mate. The TV program kind of delves, it goes further into what
much further
the film is about, isn't it?
The film
it's like
is
like a template almost.
The film's
like a template.
Very,
isn't it?
Very simple. I haven't read the book. I presume is it a book or did Michael Crichton?
It wasn't.
No, okay.
It was a screenplay by Michael Crichton.
Okay.
I think there's been like a novelization of it afterwards by him.
So I know Michael Crichton's written books that films have then been made out of. And I wasn't sure whether this was the same thing. But if you have a look at his career, like he's mostly written and directed. Every film he's directed, he's written. And then there's other films that have been written by him that other people have directed. Jurassic Park being the probably most famous.
Probably, yes. But this is just the start of that idea, isn't it?
Oh, that's a total retread of this, I would say. I mean, where would it stop? You could keep doing it forever, couldn't you?
You could. I think he got the idea from going to Disney World and watching the Pirates of the Caribbean thing where they have like robots and stuff.
Mm. And that's like how the actual, the like the kind of the dummies that move a bit as you're going around the ride.
And being a science fiction writer, he thought like, what if these robots try and kill you?
And what if they came alive? And what's the ultimate thing? Oh, they might be nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wonder, there's probably more people in my boat now who've went to watch the film after watching the TV show. Do you think those people would be disappointed or they would like it?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I did it the other way around. I was very excited when I heard there was going to be a Westworld TV series because, I love the film. I can't really say. I mean, it's different. It's like I say, it's more like a template for the TV series, really.
Yes.
It doesn't delve deeply into why this is happening.
No.
Why the robots are going in a frenzy or whatever.
It's just like one scenario, isn't it? It's like one scenario. Yeah. People go to, well, let's say the premise for anybody who doesn't know, although I'm sure people do, it's the future, although in this, the future is 1983. So 10 mm-hmm. years, 10 years on from when it was made. And in the future, there's theme parks that essentially you can go to, and it's they're all, you're fully immersed in a world. So you can either go to Westworld, which is like being in the Wild West, cowboys and Indians mm-hmm. kind of thing. Cowboys yeah. and Native Americans. Or there's Roman world. And there's also, what's the medieval world? You can go to one of these three theme parks, and essentially you become a character in that scenario.
Yeah.
And there are other humans there like you who've decided to go, mm-hmm. paid $1,000 a day to have this experience. But yeah. the rest of the world are the people who staff the bars and work in the shops and all of that kind of stuff, or robots who are there to just play out the scenarios with you. Mm-hmm. And that's the premise. A couple yeah. of guys go, and it ends up basically some of the robots start malfunctioning and have got it in mm-hmm. for the humans, which isn't meant to happen. And the people in the control room who are watching don't know how to stop it. That's it.
That's pretty much it, yeah. I mean, this theme park's run by a company called Delos, and they're the ones that sort of run the theme park and stuff. But you're right, you can't go to, it's like an adult theme park, isn't it? There's no kids around or anything like that.
Yeah.
And you can just do whatever you please with these robots, whether yeah. it's shoot them, you know, hack them with swords or whatever, or have sex with them.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want. But you're right in what you're saying there completely. But what about you? What would you go to? Would you go to Westworld? Would you go to the medieval world? What would be your pick of the Roman world?
Well, I think I was going to ask you a similar question. Out of these three, I think I would go to the Roman world. That's got to be the best mm-hmm. one. I think initially I would think medieval because that's fun. But then I saw uh-huh. the clothes, which are ridiculous. I don't want to wear a big purple, fluffy, ruffly collar thing and a big floppy mm-hmm. hat. If you're in medieval world, you want to be a fucking knight, right? You don't want to be just a fella quaffing mead from a goblet. Pros of medieval world, the wenches, I would say. That's probably why the fellas are going there. But the Roman world, going into that Roman, I mean, do you want to go in? You might end up in a fucking gladiatorial battle. Yeah. No, I don't want that. I want to be in a mm-hmm. bacchanalian party. That's what I want, which I presume would be possible. Westworld, out of the three of them, is the most down-to-earth, scruffy experience, and I don't want to have that.
Yeah. Do you know, I would pick Westworld, me.
Would you?
I would definitely pick, yeah, I would. But the thing is about people's idea of like the Wild West, it's all from films, isn't it? That's our idea of how the Wild West was. Yeah. And I think that's why Crichton didn't want to just do it as a book, because it would only work like visually, because the things that we sort of expect from like the Wild West aren't really true.
Well, even
we'll get them all from film. I'd like the idea of like large bottles of whiskey.
I love that's that. I like. Hey, certain aspect of it, I'd love. Mm-hmm. The saloon, the fella playing the piano, somebody sliding a glass or a bottle of whiskey along a bar to us. Obviously, as a single man, those ladies that work in the saloons. When you're growing up, that's one of the things that you're always like, you can watch a Western and the hope that those bawdy ladies might suddenly get down to
in
it.
In a bordello.
In a bordello, yeah. the hats and the guns and all that stuff, I'm down with that. But the living arrangements and all of that, I'm not happy with that.
No, I'd be happy with that, mate. I'd be happy with that. And the other thing is the guns, obviously. There's less physical activity that you'd need to sort of engage in. If you had a gun, you just shoot.
Yeah, people, no, but you know that's what I mean? Like you're going to Westworld purely to involve yourself in some kind of gunfights, aren't you? Like I'd be going to the Roman world just to enjoy being fed grapes, have a lovely bath, enjoy some roads.
The aqueducts.
Yeah. Big fan of the aqueducts. That would be I'd probably so get on the aqueduct like career ladder is what I'd try and do if I was there.
Yeah. So we should say that in this theme park, it's impossible for the robots to harm a guest. The guns don't work. The sensors in the guns.
Yeah.
So that they only shoot people. They don't shoot people, rather, with a high temperature.
Yeah, so you can shoot the robot and they bleed and die.
Yes.
But they can't shoot you because of this technology in the guns or whatever. And when I was been watching this TV show, it delves into it a little. If you start reading up in the fan forums and all of that stuff, which when I get into a show, sometimes I want to do. And they're on about, and you start thinking about it. But like if they punch you, they can punch you, right? So it's only a gun that doesn't hurt. So what?
Yeah.
Presumably you can still get hurt in the park. What about if another human person shoots you?
They get into a fight with
you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You could definitely get hurt, couldn't you? It's not. But then again, I was thinking the exact same thing, but the same thing could happen on any holiday, couldn't it? You could, you know, go down the aqua blaster or whatever the wrong way and break your neck. It could happen that way.
Right,
I mean, there's the other flaws, because if I did go to Westworld, I certainly wouldn't be confident about riding a horse.
Yeah, all of us.
They don't teach you that kind of stuff, do they? Because in the film, there's one guy who's already been, and they're both businessmen, and there's another guy who it's his first time. He feels a little bit silly, sort of like he's sort of acting up to a role or whatever.
Yeah.
And he feels a bit ridiculous.
It doesn't take him long to get stuck in, though, does it?
Doesn't take him long. Yeah. All it takes is Yul Brynner to knock into him in a bar and he's right in there.
So there's three main characters. Like you say, it starts with two fellas on their way into the park in like this futuristic kind of train shuttle kind of service. And again, like you say, when you've seen the show and they expand on all of this world in so much detail. In the film, there's people on their way into the park. You don't really learn.
Yeah.
There's no explanation about it whatsoever, to be honest, is there? Like, it's just, they're going to the park.
I mean, there's a little bit at the start that's done almost as a kind of a TV advert of sorts.
For Delos, it's good, that it? Bit. That's one of the best bits of the film, I think.
It is good. And that explains everything for you. What you expect going into this park, you know, that you can be whoever you want to be type thing, you know, the different worlds, the three different worlds in the park and things. It's only when the two people actually get into the park that the rules of the park are sort of explained, aren't they?
Yeah. And one of them is James Brolin.
Yes, handsome man, isn't he?
At this point, isn't really that famous, but hot stuff.
He's got good hair.
Great hair. Like a chiseled like jawline and look. Proper handsome Hollywood actor kind of guy. He's excellent in it. And then his mate, who I think is Ray Purchase from Toast of London.
his mate is Richard Benjamin.
Yes.
Who plays a guy called Peter.
Yeah, and he's like the uncool one of the two.
He's like the newbie, isn't he?
Oh, why have I come here? I'm a little bit. Do I really have to get dressed up and shoot people?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's a bit like corny, but obviously he's decided to do it, so he's in there.
Well, they delve into a little bit of his backstory. He talks blink and you miss it type thing. He talks about his ex-wife and how they're getting a divorce and stuff like that, but it's very minor. They don't delve into the backstory of the guests too much, do they?
No, not
at
all.
The main man, the gunslinger.
Yeah.
The Yul
Brynner, the king of Siam himself.
He's good, though. I mean,
he's brilliant, isn't
it? He's the template for superb. Like the Terminator, isn't he? Arnold Schwarzenegger and stuff.
Anything just like copied. That's come since then? Any kind of robotic, androidy, half-human, half-robot kind of character is based on this. It is. And he's superb. He's so good. It's like, I'm loath to use the word like iconic too much, but it's just, it is the archetypal character and performance for this kind of this kind of thing, yeah, like a device in a film or a story. It is so good. And like you say, the two lads get there and they're straight to the bar, ordering their whiskeys. It's some kind of moonshine that Richard's not too keen on, and Yul Brynner bumps into him, and you can tell straight away he's a robot. His movements are a little bit more robotic, and his lines sound very robotic and rehearsed. When he's telling them to, like, you know, well, why don't you come here and say that, or that type of thing.
Yeah. And they quickly get into a skirmish, don't
they? Yeah, and he blows him away without a second thought. A minute beforehand, he's wondering about whether he should be there or it's not, so, like, is it really all that? And then 5 minutes into being there, he's shot somebody about 10 times and killed. Didn't take him long.
So that's a good point, that, because originally, obviously, he's a bit tentative about the whole thing and stuff. Would you go if this was a real resort where you could go? Would you do it? Because I think I would.
Well, what I was going to ask you is if you could go to any world, not just these three, if you could make a world that you would go to, what scenario would it be?
That's an interesting one. I'd be fascinated in the sequel's called Future World, but it's not very like spacey and stuff like that. I think I'd like to, you know, if there could be one in space.
Well, how could they do that? Because this has got to be based on something that's happened already, right? So they know what it looks like and how it works.
Well, not necessarily. It could be anything because it's a fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a fantasy based on I want to be a cowboy.
Yeah, but like I say, the sequel's Future World, so it's all futuristic.
Nobody knows the Future World. Like, nobody knows.
Well, they've made the sequel called Future World, but I'd love to go to space. You asked me, and you know what I would do. A space one would be good for me. Whether it was, you know, I don't know, a spaceship of some kind or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'd be terrified of going to space. I think that's the.
Well, I think like you're going in the Westworld, so you go to Space World. Like, there's not going to be any, like, getting caught in the airlock and getting sucked out and your head exploding and all that kind of stuff, is it? You're going to be on, like, a big space station or something, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the point of a fantasy, though, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'd love to go to a 1960s world and be in swinging 60s London. Yeah, but, like, you know, that's not the same, is it? I think my ultimate fantasy would be, like, going to space, but because I would be terrified of going to space.
But you know what would happen? You would end up in a situation where you just have to sleep for like 100 years until you get to your destination, and then it would all go wrong when you woke up, or you'd wake up too early, or there'd be like some emergency, you'd have to get woken up. Yeah. It would be a nightmare. Nothing ever goes well in space stations or spaceships. Nothing goes well.
They don't go well in anything, whether it's Westworld, medieval world, Roman world, or whatever. The things go wrong, don't they? But all these things are controlled by the people of Delhi or something. They're like very voyeuristic. They're watching everything. And again, that's something that the TV show delves into a lot more, the way that they're watching and stuff like that.
The control and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But they're controlling, or they're creating scenarios, aren't they, for the guests?
Yeah.
You know, to
they
make
don't
them
go into that much in this in the film, like that. Like you
they
see,
don't. It's touched on.
Yeah, you see the people in the like control room. Here's one thing I thought about when I was watching it. It's obviously set in the future, but the future in 1973, their idea of the future is really based on like tangible things, isn't it? So computers and like it's tape recorders going around and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's not actually that futuristic in terms of the technology and the setting that the people are in, but the idea of having the theme park and all of that stuff is incredibly futuristic, but they don't seem to have any of the technology that really would have allowed them to make it.
Well that's the thing with sci-fi, isn't it? It's I mean, it's only things like Star Trek which got away with stuff like that, like, you know, the pads that they use, which look like iPads and stuff like that, which is very forward thinking. But it's a pretty low budget film as well, this, I think. It didn't cost a lot of money. So, yeah, I mean, computers at that time were, there was discs that were spinning around and, and things like that.
I just thought it was funny when you watch it now, and especially, like I say, I've watched the TV series very recently, and you're comparing, like, how they frame the setting. And the, there's a lot. I mean, half of Westworld, the TV series, is set in the offices or whatever the, you want to call them.
As much as where the technicians are.
And the, how they deal with whatever technology it is at that point and what the world's like outside is quite clever because you actually don't really see much of it. It could be now, it could be in 50 years' time for the most part. And I just thought watching this, it still looks very much like the 1970s when they do it.
Well, it is. I mean, you're right. But who's to say that, you know, 30 years, 50 years down the line, people will look back at Westworld and say, well, you know, that doesn't look realistic.
I know.
That could, you know, that's probably going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So it is. But the other question I have, you mentioned the bordello, didn't you, in the, you know, where they go to, to get the ladies and stuff like that. Would you have sex with a robot, Cliff?
I'm a married man, Brett.
Yes, I know. Well, I've had this, much like you, I've watched the Westworld TV series, and me and the wife had this very same conversation.
Okay. And was it, what was the outcome?
The outcome was, Brett, you can't have sex with the robots. because that she would regard that as cheating. Mm-hmm. So, but if I was a single man, right? Mm-hmm. I think I would do that. I mean,
Brett, let's face it, as a single man, we would have sex with pretty much anything.
A Hoover.
Technically a robot, especially if it's Henry.
Technically a robot, exactly. That's why he's got that smile on his face.
That little cheeky grin.
But would you, though? Because if you look at, I mean, obviously sci-fi,
but these look like,
and stuff like that. It's predicting the future, isn't it?
But these that's look what it's like doing. Normal good women. Sci-fi. It's the same as having sex with normal women.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's like ladyboys in Thailand. It's the same.
So if you were a single man, what do you think? You would?
If I don't think I'd be going to any of these parks unless I was a single man.
Yeah. I think that answers the question. You didn't actually answer the question, but I'd take it that's a yes.
I would fully engage in the theme park as a single man.
Yeah, and all the pleasure that it has to offer.
I'd be fucking shooting people in the arse. I'd be
shoot just the arse. You'd just target the arse. would you have sex with a robot lady if the theme from Bullseye was playing in the background?
Well, I think that instigates the sex. He's a little bit reticent until that comes on.
Yeah. And there was a cut scene where he's presented with a bully in a tank at the end.
Bus fare home. BFH, that's bus fare home.
No, but it's an. I mean, gladly we don't really have to worry about these type of scenarios, do we? But in years to come, you know, people will have to deal with this.
I thought you were saying years to come. Should we be widowed? And technology has caught up. Who knows?
But things are moving so quickly and stuff, aren't they? I mean, one of the questions I've got from you later is about this type of thing.
Okay.
And we don't have to worry about stuff like that, but like maybe it's not our children will, but their children.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you told that story a couple of weeks ago about the man who cheated on his sex doll robot or something.
That's right. Eh? So then they can go back and listen to this podcast, Cliff, and listen to what you had to say about the very subject.
Oh, my dad condoned it. My granddad condoned it 30 years ago.
He said it was fine. He'd shoot people in the arse and everything.
Oh, I forgot to say, I just found out I'm colorblind. I came right out of the purple.
Yeah, that one was good.
It's all right. Like that one.
Yeah, it is a good one. But it does throw up in sort of interesting concepts, and I think that's why I was really interested in the new Westworld and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because AI is the next thing that's going to come along. I mean, and how would we treat, you know, AI or robots if they are as lifelike as they are, especially in the new one?
Well, have you seen it's that shows thing. Humans? I think we've talked about it before.
I watched the first series, I think. And then it kind
that's
of
similar, you know, isn't it? Like Westworld kind of
similar, yeah.
Takes. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of inspiration there, because that was quite a high level concept for that show. And there's a bit of that, like the guy cheats on his wife by having sex with the robot help. Like, was he cheated on his wife there? So that's wrong. But the general premise of whether it was like right or wrong, or would he have done it anyway, or whatever, was there. And I think, yeah, the TV show just it takes this is very simple. Men go to theme park to have a good time. It goes wrong, and they end up getting fucking shot at, and they've got to try and escape. That's it. It doesn't really go into why they're there, how it's being created, the moral thought to taking part in this kind of thing, and all of that kind of stuff. The TV show, I think, sometimes to its detriment, opens up too many of these questions, I think, and gets itself a little bit caught up in the rights and wrongs of it, because so deep.
That's what attracted us to it. I think I like that, you know, more so because of that. And in the film, it's touched on, and obviously that's inspired the TV series and stuff, because there's a part, I think it's the first sort of introduction of or the mention of a computer virus. That's what they're saying is happening to the robots. There's some kind of virus going around, and that's causing it to malfunction. But there's a part where one of the guests is in medieval world, and one of the robots refuses his advances. And so that, like, it's becoming like sentient or whatever. It's making its own choices and its own decisions, which it's not supposed to be doing. So then if you move forward into the TV series, it goes into that an awful lot, doesn't it? But I like that about the new TV series. That's what
I like that. I just felt at times it kind of got a little bit, well, it's quite pretentious, isn't it? But I found at some points it was kind of putting those kind of highbrow notions before actually entertaining you. I watched the first series, I loved it, and I watched it all within about a week, let's say. And it's quite heavy going. Yeah. Like, I know you can't really watch more than two in a row, I think. The second series, I've watched the first three. I've had no immediate desire to go back and watch the rest of it. I don't know.
Right. I've watched them all. I think it's the third series that people couldn't really get away with and wait till. But to be honest, I've enjoyed all of
it. I was gripped by the first series. The second, a little bit like, it feels like one of those shows that, if it had just been that one series on its own, like, fucking hell, pretty much flawless and so, like kind of ambitious and stuff. But anyway, we're getting away from the film. The film doesn't touch on any of that stuff, really. So basically, those two guys are having a bit of a laugh. They're having a good time. They get themselves a lady of the bordello. The bullseye theme plays while Richard's very quickly overcome his reticence to have sex with a robot. I think the bit at the end where she walks out is like actually a bit sad, where she just goes, "You're a very nice man." And it's like, it is a bit like kind of robotic response, I think. Doesn't feel very genuine.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, even when they're, you know, making love or whatever, there's this kind of blank look on her face, isn't there? Making love, I know, I was very posh there. Having it off.
The romp,
the beast for two bucks.
Yeah,
but there's this very unresponsive kind of face that she makes, isn't it? With, you know, it doesn't mean anything because she's a robot.
Yeah, but also, like, if you, and I think probably at the time when this came out, there would have been a lot of just taking that as face value. But I think when you watch it now, you can probably start ascribing, like, a little bit more deep stuff to it, couldn't you? Like, or like,
yeah,
the relationship between men and women and all of that. And like, but that's, I don't think, other than in kind of like real film critic circles, anybody, like the general person, thinks a lot more about what does it really mean now than they did, like 70s and 80s, whatever. Like, now everybody's wants to know the real meaning behind it, the conspiracies behind it, and what, you know, what, like the Easter eggs and all of that kind of stuff. So I think you can watch films from the 70s now like that and go, oh, that's a real exact, you know, that's portraying the relationship between men and women and how they're commodities and all of that kind of stuff. But I think at the time it was probably just robot, has no emotions.
Yeah. Well, I think that's how it was taken at the time. But obviously that kind of thing's difficult to judge. But the thing is that it's a lot closer to this actually becoming reality now, isn't it? That
absolutely.
We're starting to think about these type of things a little bit more. And I think, you know, that's where, you know, the TV series and stuff like that does its good work, I think. But I don't think people in the 70s were too bothered about
stuff like that. After that, he's dispatched Yul Brynner. And then there's a great scene where they're all sleeping after they've had it off. And it shows you the main street and with all the dead bodies who've been, like, laid, just finished.
Yeah, off. After a bank robbery, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good thing, because he's like, should we go out and, like, join in with this bank robbery or to stop it? And he's like, nope. No chance.
No, this is going to be better.
But all the time, like, the sex scene's going on. You've got the bullseye theme, but also loads of gunshots from this bank robbery in the background. Yeah. It's really good. I really liked it. But then it cuts to the street at night with all the dead bodies lying there, the dead robot bodies lying there, and the staff, the Delos staff, basically come and, like, sweep them all up and put them all in the back of trucks and take them away. And
to repair.
Repair them and send them all back again the next day. So Yul Brynner's back again a day later.
He is. He's relentless, isn't he? And they've got old Terminator way. He's back at them, isn't he?
And he comes and finds them straight away.
He bursts into the hotel room, doesn't he? And kind of puts a gun on John, and the other guy comes in, Peter, and he blows him away again.
Blows away again. It's good, to be fair.
It is.
He's like, in one day, he's gone from not being keen on it to, like, bursting the room and absolutely shooting him to shit. It's like,
he does.
It's good.
He does. And
he's buoyed by his night of passion, obviously, with the
he is.
With the bordello lady.
But the thing is, I think the film is trying to say these things without actually, you know, being too heavy on it. It is trying to say, is this a morally right thing for somebody to be doing? You know what I mean? But it doesn't delve into it too much.
Well, I think if you look at the play and God, it's all about play and God, isn't it? And the TV show takes that out to so many levels. Everybody in the chain of events, from the guy at the top of the company to the guy who owns the company to the guy who created the park to the people who are in it, like, they're all playing God on certain levels. And how do you know, reconcile that with yourself? And, well, is it a good thing, or probably it's not, and all of that?
Because eventually these machines will rise up and destroy, won't they?
That's like Terminator.
Or in the case of the Westworld TV series, that as well. They do sort of, you know, start taking over and becoming sentient and aware of what's going on and stuff like that.
But maybe we disagree on this, but Anthony Hopkins sets that in motion in the TV series, doesn't he?
He does. He does. But it's not nothing to say that somebody hasn't set this in motion. It's just not explained or delved into, is it? Because there's a part where it says, we don't really know what these machines, how they work.
He says they're made, these machines are made by machines. So we don't know really how they work. Yeah, it says these machines are made by machines. Exactly, so how do we know what they're capable of?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So who's to say that hasn't been set in motion by?
I agree. That's a good point.
You know, some AI or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, well, Ubrin has been dispatched again.
He's been felled. He's been felled, and then they talk about the infectious, the computer virus that's happening. It's kind of spreading around the park and stuff like that, much like a virus.
Yeah, and you see,
and some of the scientists are saying, well, no, I don't believe that that could happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's the computers, the robots or whatever. I don't think it could happen. But yeah, that's how it starts. And it starts with a snake, doesn't it, that bites John's character.
Yeah, because you're not meant to the snakes are meant to
injure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then things just go down the pan from then, don't they? There's a guy in medieval world who gets killed by the Black Knight and stuff like that.
Yeah, that bit's good.
And then Yul Brynner turns back up. Yeah.
Yul Brynner turns back again.
But then he's back again.
He won't take no for an answer, will he?
He won't take no for an answer. And eventually he ends up shooting John. Somehow the gun must have the same kind of technology as the robot or whatever, and that is malfunctioning as well, and that's what's able to kill John. But there's another thing that they keep talking about, which is the temperature in the film. I don't know if that has any effect. Obviously, the gun won't shoot anything with a, you know, that doesn't have warm temperature. Mm-hmm. But when the scientists are talking and stuff like that, they keep talking about, well, we change the temperature here, or change the temperature there, and that seemed to resolve the problem. And when they're walking out the bar, John kind of says, it's freezing, isn't it? It's freezing.
Okay.
And
I missed that.
That's when
Yul Brynner
shoots him. Yeah.
So if it gets...
I mean, again, it's a funny one, this film, because, like, if you look at, if you delve into it a little bit more, you can see the things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the TV show takes it on. But it's just, these things are just touched on.
Yeah,
they're not delved into.
I think with Michael Crichton, he probably had, like, now, if he was, that's not him, but like if somebody was coming up with this story now, they would come up with the story of the film, but they'd probably come up with 10 times as much of that story for a backstory to kind of ground the film in something that felt real. And then when it eventually got turned into a TV series, that bit would all come back into it, and they'd expand the film and include all of that. At this point in time, Michael Crichton has probably thought of these things and then written the screenplay. And I'm assuming he hasn't got another 10 volumes of, like, and this is where this guy's, you know, he will mention his wife's left him, and this is why, and all of these things have, like, gone towards bringing him into this park and stuff like that. But I think now that would happen. And I think Michael Crichton's obviously, like, thought of these things that would inform it, but never really expanded on them or wrote them down or anything like that. So the film gets made, and these little things keep popping up that he knows are like a signal to the storyline or the behavior of the characters. But really, it doesn't get expanded upon because there's nothing to expand on it with.
It would be a four-hour film if he had to kind of do it.
Mercifully, it is 88 minutes long. Yes.
I know. You do like... But, I mean, it's good because, I mean, any good science fiction writer almost is there to predict the future. And this certainly, you know, does do that, I think, with the... Obviously, it like I say, they're talking about computer viruses, which people would have went, viruses for computers? That doesn't happen, but
how can you get
a virus?
But there's, and the one other thing is, so Yul Brynner comes back, and what you find out is there's been like mass killings, and it's not just happened. Yul Brynner's not the only one who's lost the plot. You keep getting these little flicks over the medieval world and Roman world where things aren't going well and the robots are malfunctioning or killing people or whatever. And then eventually there's just Yul Brynner and these two. John gets killed, and after that, it's just a chase between Yul Brynner and Richard.
It's like a pursuit, isn't it, of Yul Brynner you know, after.
And he's only got one thing on his mind, Peter, is killing this guy.
Yeah, but that's his program, isn't it? So it's strange for you or Brenda's character. Is he sentient in a way? Or does he understand what he's doing, or is he just following his program?
I don't think so, because I think that's what happens at the beginning when he bumps into him in the bar. Yeah. Like this storyline.
That's what he's there for, right?
Yeah, this storyline in my mind is that they get to the bar, Yul Brynner's character bumps into him, they have a gunfight, they go to bed. Next day, Yul Brynner's back again. Mm-hmm. He's probably not meant to engage in the same argument the next day. So I think it's already started at that point.
Yeah.
And then he gets killed again. He comes back again. And it's almost like he's got this kind of crazy vendetta, very much Terminator style. But I don't think he has. Like you say, I think his storyline was bump him into him in the bar and have this fight.
Uh-huh.
But he's stuck in that and he can't get out of it. And then for whatever reason...
Right. I think they call it loops, don't they?
Yeah.
In the TV series, that's what they call it, the storyline loop.
But it's not always meant to be with the same guest, right? That's the difference.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing is that looking at it, that when the scientists are talking, they said that this virus started in medieval worlds, and then it's like kind of spread around to, you know, other parts of the park. And it's strange that in medieval world, it is where the woman refuses to do what she's supposed to be doing. That means that she's away, she's sentient or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Yul Brynner is in a different part of the park where this virus hasn't really fully took hold.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just following his programming. Whether, you know, after a certain period of time or whatever, he would then become self-aware or whatever. So that's just what I thought. Maybe that would happen. But obviously we don't get to see all that kind of, because it's just carnage and they just end up killing each other, don't they? Killing everybody.
Yeah, so pretty much everybody's dead. They end up crossing over into different worlds. And again, there's like, when you watch the TV show and watch it back, you can see bits of the film that the TV show uses, shots, and
yeah,
like set pieces and things like that they totally lift as little Easter eggs, if you know the film.
Yeah.
I
think it's famous for its Easter eggs, isn't it? I think Yul Brynner's in the TV show. He's standing in the background somewhere.
Yeah, they go down a lift and his character's behind, because one of the things I was reading about the TV show is that, I guess until the end of that first series, you're not sure really whether it's a sequel, a remake, or just the same park. That this happened, Yul Brynner did all the shit, and then years later it's back up and running again, and these people are back again. So you keep seeing little things that maybe, if you know the film, you're like, oh, that was Yul Brynner's like outfit in the back there. So maybe it's like, this is just years down the line, and it's a continuation of that same storyline, and it's happening again or whatever.
I don't think I like Easter eggs and things. I like that interest. Do you like stuff like that?
I'm a bit shit at like spotting them. Like I think I said before, like after going to uni and like trying to like analyze everything that was on the screen and all of that kind of stuff, and what it meant and what the dual meaning was and all of that of the script and the you know what they were saying and all of that stuff. I think now I've kind of reacted against that a bit, because there was a period of time whenever I watched anything, all I was looking at was like that kind of methodical stuff and the theory behind it. And after a while, I kind of reacted against it and whatever, switched that little bit of my mind off when I watch stuff. I obviously still have it a bit, but like, let's say me and Jane are watching something, I'll be like, oh, that was that thing from back then. And do you remember that a couple of episodes ago or whatever? And she'll be like, yeah, I don't know. Who's this? But
Because I'm the same as you are. I see things like that to the wife. And I mean, Star Trek's a good example, because the madam who's in the bordello in this film is in Star Trek. She's in the 60s Star Trek. In fact, she's in quite a lot of the Star Trek's, like, The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and stuff like that. And she's like the madam in that bordello. And she was married to Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah, who made Star Trek.
Created Star Trek. Yeah. And she's called Majel Barrett. So I'm telling sort of Lisa all this kind of stuff. no, I think it's quite interesting and, yeah. and things. And she's like, yeah, all right then. Not bothered about it at all.
I like you need to say like that stuff out loud.
I like little Easter eggs. And... Yeah, you do. I mean, I know it, so I want to tell other people it. So, yeah. Well, you either like it or you don't, or you're just not interested, I guess. Yeah.
So what? So basically, the last half an hour of the film is Yul Brynner following Richard on pursuit, actually, as they leave Westworld, go into medieval world. And he's basically he's just one track mind to try and kill him. John's dead. He's on his own.
He's just pursuing him, isn't he? He's called Peter, not Richard.
Do I keep saying Richard?
That's the first
sorry,
name.
Sorry.
Whatever.
I mean, his name really is irrelevant to the film.
What isn't irrelevant is his tash, because it's a magnificent tash.
I'm not sure about that. I think it's very poor.
You're not? You don't like his tash? I thought you had a good tash. I mean,
You like my beard? It looks like I haven't got a beard here, right?
Yes, I do like your beard, actually. But it looks good.
It looks good on you. But it's not. It's white hair, like the Brett Davison beard.
Is it?
Yeah.
You're getting the greys, are you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's a shame. It does look like it's missing, actually. I just thought you'd, you'd cut it in
taking
that way.
Chunks out. No, just all white.
Because previously you couldn't grow a tash, could you?
Well, you obviously always that was say your that, problem. But when I was like,
well, it's because it was true.
I was a child.
Cliff, you were the first person I ever met that had facial hair. You had giant sideboards. I was always envious of your sideboards.
Well, that brilliant. Something. That'd be something I was better than you at.
They were brilliant sideboards. So yeah, it's just like he's just pursuing them, isn't he?
The main thing is, it's a first in cinema, I think. Computer-generated graphics, because you see stuff from Yul Brynner's eyes. Again,
his point of view,
the Terminator or the Predator, in the Predator, whatever. Mm. You see from his eyes, I mean, how he can follow him with that vision, because it's terrible.
It's like a Commodore 64.
Worse than that.
In a bad way.
Commodore 16. It is.
And he's been upgraded, hasn't he? His vision to actually do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point. It's the first sort of computer generated image in a film, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a first for two things, this film: the computer virus thing and the sort of computer imagery on it and stuff like that as well. So there's the Terminator thing. Obviously, that's been massively ripped from this film, I think, hasn't it? I think I read something that James Cameron said that he thought of the Terminator film because he was ill and he had like a fever dream and he dreamt the whole thing up. That's complete bollocks.
No, he was ill. He was off sick and he watched Westworld.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. But there's also a bit where, like you've just mentioned, the Predator there, where acid's thrown in Yul Brynner's face and it sort of, it sort of affects his vision. And Peter's kind of standing next to the fire and stuff, and Yul Brynner can't see him. He can't sort of differentiate.
You can't see him because of the fire, but now you've mentioned the temperature stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder
so that's like the Predator, isn't it? Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I never thought about that because he's got, like, he gets distracted by the fire. Almost like when it's hot, he can't do the thing that he's trying to do.
It could be that. I mean, this kind of brings me on to the bravest stuntman I've ever seen in my life, who gets set on fire and the flames are nearly reaching the top of the castle. I mean, that's super fucking dangerous, isn't it?
it's good.
He's properly alight.
It's a classic trope in films where the baddie is dead and then he's not actually dead. To be fair, Peter, there's no way he's dead when he just starts wandering off. Absolutely no way. Yeah. He just falls on the floor. He falls on the floor. Uh-huh. He's like, right, I'll just saunter through this medieval garden then. And of course, he's not dead. It's not like he's to the bottom of a swamp, and all of a sudden his hands are switched out the top of it or whatever, like in loads of films. This is a man who's just fallen over, and he's like, that's probably him done then, even though I've already thrown acid on his face and that didn't harm him, etc.
Yeah, I mean, he does come back, doesn't he? Peter, he hears shouting and screaming, and he thinks that, you know, he needs to save somebody. But this is another good bit where Peter can't tell.
Right at the end, right at the end.
Yeah. He can't tell whether it's a human or a robot.
But we know it's a robot because we know it's the woman who refused the advances of the guest earlier in the film.
Yes.
And she's on a rack.
We know, but it's a good part where he can't tell any sort of heightened state or whatever. Because the only way that they can tell in this film is with the hands.
Yeah, they keep saying
the eyes.
The one thing they haven't got right yet is the hands.
Is the hands, yes.
But also,
I think fannies are harder to do.
Also, the hands
and cocks.
Yeah, but nobody's looking, are they? The hands. But they just use the hands, the normal hands of the human actors. So you don't really know what they mean. You can't tell what they mean in the film because they're just like, look at the hand. You're like, yeah, they're normal hands. Well, how are these guys meant to work it out?
They're slightly sort of rolled up at the fingers, aren't they? That's the only thing.
About the fingers go like that a bit.
like they're suffering from chilblains.
And we all know nobody would have that in Westworld. So.
Of course they wouldn't. Nobody's had their hands next to gas fire, have they? But yeah, that's the only way they can tell. But I like the end because he can't tell whether it's a robot or not or whatever. And he's just kind of getting down to his basic sort of, I'll save this woman or whatever and be a hero. And he tries to give her a drink of water and she blows up. So that's not good.
Yeah, she actually goes, no, before he dips it into her mouth. And he
doesn't realize.
She has like an electrical malfunction. And
she does. And Yul Brynner comes back, Bond.
Yeah, he's Bond. Right. He's got a Bond fat fies.
Gets him.
Nearly gets him. Yeah. And then he just kind of like sidesteps him and he falls over again and his face comes off.
He does. It does die. And then is the kind of Halloween 3 kind of ending with the repetitive thing said over and over again, which I liked. But yeah, I mean, I love this film. I was glad to watch it again. I'll definitely watch it in the future.
What do you think the end? He's just like sitting there, he just looks scared, and then it just ends. It doesn't really linger on him long enough for his face to go from like relief to what the fuck do I do now? It just ends and it's a little bit abrupt, I think.
That was a little bit abrupt. I mean, it's not Planet of the Apes, is it? But, you know, difficult fun to end, I guess. Unless you want to follow Peter through the various mazes and caverns of the Delos place, not really. Which I don't think you do.
No,
exactly.
Not bothered about that. So yeah, Westworld, good. Pioneering. Mm-hmm. Things copied it. He basically took the idea for Jurassic Park and made millions and billions and billions of dollars off it.
His own idea.
Yeah, he copied his own idea. And you know that talking about playing God and all of that, that's exactly what Jurassic Park's about, isn't it? Great. Also, Michael Crichton, I love AR, and he's the man who created AR. good. Like, I was thought it was a bit weird that he's the guy who does AR and Jurassic Park, but
yeah,
okay,
just a good writer, I guess.
I mean, that was kind of just good. So yeah, really enjoyed it. If anybody hasn't seen the original, well worth a watch.
Watch it.
And it's only 88 minutes, so it won't take up too much of your time if you don't like it, but I think it's great. Also, I'm going to mention a song.
Yeah. And watch a TV series as well, if you haven't.
Watch a TV series, but TV series is a lot harder to... Well, it's long.
Obviously. Yeah, but people binge watch shit these days, don't they?
Yeah, no, I agree. I liked it, and I get bored of stuff quite easily, so...
Well, that's good.
Got into it. The other thing I was going to say, do you know the band Pavement?
I think so, yes.
Their singer, Stephen Malcolmus, launched a solo career after Pavement split up, and he has a song called Jojo's Jacket, which I will tweet at the end when we put this out. Tweet a link to it, because it's all about Yul Brynner in Westworld, and it's one of my favourite songs. So
oh, good. I'd like to hear that then. Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Yeah, it's a good, catchy song, and the lyrics go something like, perhaps you saw me in Westworld, I acted like a robotic cowboy, and then blah, blah, blah. He's basically telling the song from the perspective of Yul Brynner. Okay.
Good. Yeah, I'd like that. Good. I'll be interested there to hear it. But in the meantime, Mr. Cliff,
we have a quiz.
We'll have a robot quiz for you. Which I think, I think you might get some of these right. I don't know how you might get them right, but there you go. Right. Question number one, Mr. Cliff. Which band are traditionally replaced by robots during their live performances of their song, The Robots?
I think it might be Kraftwerk.
It might be, yeah. What a brilliant song that is, isn't it?
You a Kraftwerk fan?
I am a Kraftwerk fan.
Thought you might be.
Yes, I've been watching a few Kraftwerk live performances where there are robots.
Yeah, but also like now when they go out on tour, like it is just, it's not them, is it? It is robots just doing the song.
That's just robots.
It's holograms.
I think that's what they'd like.
It is, though. It's just their faces on video screens where computers play the songs, and it's about 100 quid to go and see them. The two of them are dead for a start or forever, so.
Yeah. Bring them back.
No, I mean.
Next one.
Okay.
The computer Deep Blue was the first computer to win against a reigning world champion at what game?
I mean, I don't know this, but chess seems like the obvious answer.
Yeah, it's the right answer.
Yeah.
So, yes, the computer beat Gary Kasparov. So, well done. I think I would have also got that right. Yeah, you would have also got that right. In fact, you did. US firm Real Robotics sells six robots which can blink, move its eyes and neck and lips. How much do you think that this sex doll would set you back, old Cliff, in dollars?
In dollars.
Yeah.
It can only move those things, though.
Well, there was other things that I was hesitant to sort of put down. Okay. So it does do other things. I'm sure you can use your imagination.
Okay. I think I'm going to say, mosquito. In dollars, $18,000.
It's not that steep.
Okay.
$8,000 to $10,000, okay, these sex robots cost. Bargain. Which machine killed 37 people between 1978 and 1995 at an average of 2.18 deaths a year?
Which machine?
Kills more people. Yes, kills more people than sharks, this machine, per year.
Is it Bertha, lovely Bertha?
No, you know Bertha wouldn't kill anybody. So it's definitely not that. Would you like some clues?
Is it a paper shredder?
It's not a paper shredder. Would you like a clue?
Give me a clue.
It's a machine that people could feasibly get their hands stuck in, as it hasn't dispensed what they have purchased.
Like the machine at the baths where you get your Kit Kat from.
Yes, that is true. Vending machines.
They're a big killer. Wow.
Apparently people get their hands stuck in and they pull the whole machine on top of them and get crushed. So that's what happens.
Oh, so it's not that the hands are getting chewed up, is that they fall
down? No, they're not getting chewed up. They're generally getting the hands stuck in it and then they're pulling the hand out.
Okay.
Yeah, and the machine falls on them and kills them.
I would say they get their just desserts.
Still kills them.
Mm-hmm.
Which homicidal AI sings the song Daisy Bell as he's being powered down? Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to...
I don't know this one, but I appreciate your efforts.
Thanks. It's Hal from 2001.
Obviously, I've never watched that film.
Obviously, you haven't. Which science fiction writer created the three laws of robotics?
I know this one.
You do, don't you?
Can you tell us what the three laws are, though, first?
I certainly can. The first law is a robot shall not harm a human. The second rule is that it must obey instructions given by a human. And the third rule is it must avoid actions or situations that could cause harm to itself as long as this does not conflict with the first two laws.
In depth. That's
yes.
Got to be Mr. Isaac Asimov who would write that.
Yes, it surely is. Well done. Can't believe you got that one, Cliff.
You what tipped us off, but yeah, I like that one.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. So well done. You did quite well at that quiz. I don't know how many you got right because I don't keep count.
Okay. Well, thank you. It was quite a good robot quiz. I enjoyed it. I've got a fish that can break dance. Well, had a fish aye. That I can break dance. I only did it once, though, and only for about 10 seconds.
Yeah. Good, you finished it? On the worst one. Yeah. Rubbish.
Yeah, Jane. But no, like I should have mentioned this earlier. Jane gave us an ultimatum last week. She said,
ooh,
it's either her or me addiction mm-hmm. to sweet things. Well, the decision was a piece of cake.
See, that was better.
That's all right.
Well done. It was. Right. I hope your dad appreciates these.
I hope so. We've got some music. I think we both like it. It's a band called Crimson Bloom. And the song is called Stir It Up. They're from Teesside. I really like it, Brett.
Yes.
I think you will.
Yes, I really like it. Yes, I do really like it as well. It's excellent. It's released on the 19th of Feb, so we're quite current with this one, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So, it's good.
Yeah, it is.
Reminded us of The Second Coming by the Stone Roses. And
yes.
And it reminded us of a load of things I used to listen to when I was about 20, probably in the wake of The Second Coming by the Stone Roses. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Funky, guitar-y kind of, yeah. Funky,
yeah, it's good
kind of stuff. Really like it.
Me too.
So we'll switch that on now and say thank you everyone for listening. Nice to have you on board. Hope you enjoyed Westworld. We'll hope you forgive us for the shambolic beginning. And next week we'll be back with more good stuff. Chat to us on Twitter. Send us your agony non cis male questions. And we'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Yes. Bye. We'll be right back.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.